in the KSRO kitchen. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash. Good morning, everybody. Welcome.
Well, good to see you on this beautiful day in Sonoma County.
We're just blessed by having temperatures in the upper 70s, low 80s, overnight lows in the 40s and 50s, the best weather in the country.
I know. Do you follow the weather in other parts of the country? And it's like, whoa.
My condolences go out to the rest of the country. Yeah. Today we talk with Grace Lin. Grace is the author of Chinese Menu, The History, Myths, and Legends Behind Your Favorite Foods. And I knew, John, when I got copies of the book, that you would especially love this, not only because you're a fabulous chef and food person, but also you're an artist. And I knew the illustrations and the whole concept of the book would appeal to you.
It does. Thank you for that. But it is so unusual. I don't think I've ever seen another book like this.
Grace, thanks so much for joining John and me. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for having me.
Our pleasure. And it's afternoon where you are, correct?
Yes, it's 2 o'clock here.
2 o'clock back in the East Coast. Who is the beautiful young lady that is on the cover of the book?
That is my daughter's friend, my daughter's good friend. My daughter is the other girl that's inside the book.
And she's holding a bowl of soup, it looks like, on the front of the book. Is that correct?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And what is the soup she's holding?
Well, this soup that she's holding is just kind of to symbolize all the stories that's in the food. So there's not a specific soup that she's holding here. Probably it was a reference to the Crossing the Bridge noodle soup that there is a story about in the book.
So we should talk a little bit about how you approach this book, because it's not a cookbook. It's really a book about the mythology and the stories behind various Chinese foods, and some of the myths are ones that you made up.
Well, not exactly.
is that fair to say?
Not exactly. Probably might be better to say that some of the myths are myths that I took three or four, because there'd be three or four different versions of. Mm-hmm. Of the story behind, the story behind Kung Pao Chicken, and I would kind of merge it all together and make one a new story, I suppose. But it isn't something like completely made up. They all do have real roots. You can kind of follow where it came from in mythology.
It's great.
Or legend or history.
Yeah. Well, the book begins with chopsticks, you know, which I think is fascinating. I didn't realize that there was so much stuff that you had to know about chopsticks. You know, how to use them, number one, and taboos for chopsticks. Can you talk about this?
Sure. So chopsticks is always the first thing that people are always curious about when they go to a Chinese restaurant, because of course they eat with chopsticks and not forks or spoons or knives. And that was really done on purpose, because all the way back when Confucius was around, he felt like having forks and knives on the table were like weapons, and he didn't think that that was very civilized. So that's why he really encouraged people to use chopsticks instead. He felt like using chopsticks was a civilized way of eating. And because of that, there's lots of rituals with chopsticks. For example, you shouldn't stick your chopsticks straight up in a bowl of rice, because it kind of brings to mind like a incense at an altar, at a temple, when you kind of are honoring the dead. So it kind of brings death to your dining table, and that's not really proper either. Another thing that they say that you probably shouldn't do is something we call grave digging, which is when you get the communal plate of food and you kind of say you get beef and broccoli and you only want pieces of beef and you want the big fat pieces of beef. So you kind of go through all the pieces to find the pieces you like. That is considered very rude, and they call that grave digging.
I love how you formatted the book. You start off with the foundational ingredients of Chinese cuisine, and under each one you explain why that ingredient is so important, and then there's a wonderful myth and story about each of the ingredients, and then you get into the foundational dishes, the entrees and the appetizers and the dessert parts. You had this idea what, almost 20 years ago, to do a book like this?
Yeah. Yes. So I am mostly known as a children's book author and illustrator. And back in 2004, I did a book called Fortune Cookie Fortunes for, it was a picture book, and it was for kindergartners, first graders. But even though it was for such a young age, I researched the fortune cookie, and that is when I found out that the fortune cookie is a completely Asian American invention. That if you go to China, nobody knows what a fortune cookie is. And so when I told this to my friends at the time, they were all really surprised, and they all said around the same thing. They'd say, oh, so the fortune cookie is not even really Chinese.
Right.
And they always said it with kind of this tone of disgust, which actually kind of bothered me, because I was born here in the United States, but I have an Asian heritage. And I could see a lot of people saying that about me, like, oh, she's not really Chinese.
Yeah.
And so I kind of felt like food that was American that but had Asian roots deserved more respect, just like our fellow Americans who might have Asian roots.
So would you talk about, because it's one of the ingredients, I guess, that you address in the book about fortune cookies. There's kind of a a battle between, did they happen in LA first, or did they happen in San Francisco first?
Yes. You know, that it's a very contentious argument. but there was a mock trial, but it did take place in San Francisco, and they did so, and the winner was declared San Francisco as the hometown of the fortune cookies. Though they did have hometown advantage during the mock trial, so people, the LA residents, still tried to claim it. But the truth is, those in LA kind of claim that the fortune cookie has Chinese American roots, and those in San Francisco claim that the fortune cookie has Japanese American roots. And it's probably, I mean, I would say like 95% probable that it is from San Francisco with Japanese American roots, not Chinese American roots. But there's like that 5% that says it might be.
Yeah.
It might be Chinese. And I include in my book the story that the Chinese Americans used to bolster their argument.
The book starts off with best following chopsticks. Then you go into tea and you talk about this white hair silver needle tea, the most delicate of all teas. What is your favorite tea?
Honestly, I love jasmine tea. It's the aroma. As soon as I smell it, it's floral, but it's when you drink it, it's not not too sweet. You know, so I actually really love jasmine tea, and I always get that when when I get boba, I always get the jasmine boba tea.
Yeah. So I didn't know that jasmine tea, it isn't a kind of tea. Well, it is a kind of tea, but it can be green tea, it can be black tea, it can be white tea, it can be all of those. Mm-hmm. Can all be jasmine, because it's the jasmine flowers that are added to the tea to give it that exotic aroma and flavor, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's what makes it the jasmine tea. So you can have green tea, green jasmine tea, black jasmine tea. So it's not the actual tea that makes it jasmine. It's the fact that it's been infused with jasmine.
I love in the appetizer section, there's a little medical advice that dumplings can be good for frostbite.
Well, that was the original. That was the original intention. I don't know if that's actually true. So let me back up for your listeners. So if you ever go to a Chinese restaurant and you order dumplings, you might notice that the dumplings look like they're in the shape of a person's ear. And that's because the person who invented dumplings was an ancient Chinese doctor who originally invented dumplings as a cure for people's frostbitten ears. He thought if he made these dumplings and he filled it with all these warming herbs and spices and meats, and if people ate them, it would warm them up from the inside and cure the frostbitten ears, which is why he made the dumplings ear-shaped to remind them what this medicine was for. But even back then, I don't know if it cured anybody's ears. I think they just liked eating the dumplings like we do today.
Well, you said in there that dumplings are your favorite food. Is that correct?
It is. But, you know, people have been asking me since this book came out, like, which is your favorite Chinese food? And I've been giving, I think dumplings is my favorite food regularly, but then I have to admit I love Peking duck. But I didn't say that originally because Peking duck is kind of like a special occasion food. You don't get that every time you go out. But if I had to choose, I might choose the Peking duck over it.
But it's more expensive. And you also, which I didn't really know, that to carve a Peking duck is... It's an art form, and chefs who, you know, I couldn't do it. I just get a duck and whack it up. It's not going to work.
Yeah, I mean, originally the traditional way. I don't think they really do it. I don't think they really have to do it this way anymore. But the traditional Peking duck had to be cut in 108 slices, and that goes all the way back to the story in my book, where a chef had to feed an army of 108 soldiers and make sure that every soldier got a slice of duck or else he'd be in big trouble, which he did not want to have.
What I love that you have done in this book, Grace, is you've made history come alive. You've made it joyful. And for so many people to think history is dry, I suggest they pick up a copy of this book. It's very engaging for adults. And also I could see kids really wanting to develop the love of reading by the way you write. It's so engaging. Would you talk just a moment about the magnificent illustrations and who did these in the book?
Oh, thank you. Well, I am the illustrator of this book. So like I said earlier, I'm actually mostly known for being an author and illustrator of children's books. So illustrating this book was not a stretch for me. So this book is set up just like a Chinese menu, hence the title. So there's different sections like tea, appetizers, soup, side orders, and each of the sections it has like a section illustration that kind of like has the banner of side order, and that is a full color illustration painted traditionally, and it usually either features my daughter or my daughter's friend or them together. And then you go into the section, and then it tells the story of each of the specific items. Like in the chef's special section, it talks about Kung Pao chicken. It talks about Buddha's delight. And those illustrations are done with the help of the computer. I drew them with pencil on paper, and then I scanned them in, and then kind of touched them up and colored them in on the computer.
They're great. Would you talk about, so one of the sections is soup, and I think one of the great quotes is, you can eat without meat, but not without soup. That soup is such an important part of the Chinese meal.
Oh, it's very important. I mean, the traditional Chinese cuisine always had to have soup. In fact, they did not have beverages while they were eating. Like now we have tea at the table, but in traditional Chinese culture, tea was a completely separate pastime. It was like tea time. You didn't have tea at the table. You didn't have water at the table. You had soup at the table. So soup was really the liquid that you used to drink things, to wash things down. And so that's why soup was such an important part of the meal.
We'll take a quick break. Grace, don't go away. We'll be right back with more from Chinese Menu, the history, myths, and legends behind your favorite foods by Grace Lin, a Newbery and Caldecott Honor author. She's written over 30 books, and this is just magnificent for lovers of food and art and storytelling of all ages. I'm Steve Garner, along with Chef John Ash, in the Chaos Ordo Kitchen.
Fox Across America with Jimmy Fallon, weeknights 6 to 9 on KSRO.
KSRO.
Sonoma County's FM News Talk.
1,048 Sonoma County students have something very specific to say to Barbie Simpson and everyone at Simpson Sheet Metal.
Thank you!
Simpson Sheet Metal has inspired students from 6 elementary schools to read over 41,000 books in their after-class time last school year. In cooperation with the Amaturo Family Foundation, students earned over 167 laptop computers, 47 Nintendo Switches, 173 Apple AirPods, and over 400 free trips to Scandia Epicenter and Snoopy's Ice Arena, all funded by private citizens here in Sonoma County. Designed as a fun and rewarding game, read on Sonoma motivates young children to improve their comprehension and reading habits. It's clear reading is an essential component for success in school and life. Sadly, California has the highest adult illiteracy rate in the nation. Learn how you can help grow the program for this coming school year. Go to readonsonoma.org. readonsonoma.org.
Sonoma County District Attorney Carla Rodriguez on the danger and prevalence of fentanyl in Sonoma County.
Our goal is to increase awareness so people understand just how deadly it is. It's very easy to make. It's very cheap to make. That's why it's replaced heroin and some of the other opioids that we'd seen in the past.
What is a fatal dose of fentanyl?
Basically, 2 milligrams is enough to kill someone. And sometimes, even if you use a test strip, it won't detect the fentanyl because unless you break down a pill, you're not going to know how much is in there. So it's basically like playing Russian roulette if you're using any drug right now, especially a counterfeit pill.
How is the situation evolving locally?
We've seen here in Santa Rosa over the summer new strains of synthetic opioids coming out in the market that are resistant to Narcan. It used to be 4 out of every 10 pills had a fatal overdose. Now it's 6 out of 10. We're seeing about 2 deaths every week on average, and the age range from infants and toddlers to people in their 60s, 70s.
One pill can kill. Find out what you need to know at onepillsonoma.org. onepillsonoma.org.
When veterans return to civilian life, they deserve your recognition and support. You can help put vets to work by donating your car, truck, or van to Patriotic Hearts. Your donation will directly support programs to help vets find jobs or even start their own business. Donate today for fast, free pickup of your vehicle, running or not. Call 800-209-3485. 800-209-3485. 800-209-3485.
Sponsored by Patriotic Arts.
When a replacement window contractor says they custom fit their windows to your opening, do they really? Hi, I'm John Gorman with Save Energy Company. Some companies measure their new windows to the closest half inch and use fillers and spacers to make up the difference. Doing this makes installation quicker and easier. At Save Energy Company, we measure to the 1/8 of an inch, ensuring a tighter, leak-proof, energy-efficient fit. Why do we do this? Because it's the right thing to do. Save Energy Company. We feature Simonton Windows and Doors.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Grace Lynn is joining Chef John Ash and me remotely via the magic of telephone on the Good Food Hour today. Her new book is Chinese Menu, The History, Myths, and Legends Behind Your Favorite Foods. It just explodes. The cover, the artwork, the wonderful stories that Grace tells about many of our favorite ingredients and many dishes we've enjoyed in Chinese restaurants. Mm-hmm. So before we move from soup, John, you wanted to talk about...
One of the things that comes up is the names of some of these dishes, which are really wild. And in the soup section, there's the crossing the bridge noodle soup. What is that? And can you give us a little bit of the background on that?
Sure. So crossing the bridge noodle soup has very much to do with the story, because basically what happened was there was a scholar who went to kind of seclude himself in this place, this island, so he could study for the big examination. And so he had this devoted wife who would bring him his lunch every day. But to get to this excluded island, it was a really long walk across the bridge. And everything she brought him, by the time he got it, was like soggy and not warm and not delicious. And he didn't really like the food that much by the time he got it. So she had to invent this soup, crossing the bridge noodle soup, that she could bring to him. So basically, it was like a boiling hot broth that she packaged separately with a special kind of chicken fat on top so that it would keep the heat in. And then she'd bring all the raw ingredients with her. And then when she got there, she would assemble it all for him there. So it would be fresh and delicious and just right for him to eat. So they called it crossing the bridge noodle soup because it was the fact that she had to cross that long bridge that made her invent this soup.
So is that a true story?
Or they like to say it is. If you ask those from that area, they will definitely say it is.
In every Chinese banquet I've been to, the Lazy Susan is an indispensable centerpiece. And I learned that it was not invented by some Chinese chef or technology wizard.
No, you know, the folk tale is, and this is probably not true, but the folk tale is that Thomas Edison invented it because his daughter Susan was so lazy at the table to pass dishes, so he invented it. That's why it's called the Lazy Susan. But like I said, it's probably not true.
Well, you credit a woman named Elizabeth Howell of Missouri, who actually was credited with inventing it.
Yes, she's the first one that got the patent.
The patent.
So, you know, the stories go everywhere.
So we have time to grab another couple sections. John, why don't you grab one?
Well, the section that you call chef specials, I think, was great. Because a lot of those things are dishes that we recognize from going to Chinese restaurants. But again, with this wonderful naming of certain recipes, Buddha jumps over the wall. What is that?
Oh, that's a great story. And this is one that my father told me. I remember like him laughing when he told me this story. And it was actually one that when I started writing this book, I had to make sure that it wasn't something he just made up. But it's a real dish, and it's actually quite famous. And the story goes that there was a group of scholars who had kind of set up a meeting next to a Buddhist temple, and like they were to hang out, and they were cooking lunch, and they brought together all these ingredients to make a delicious lunch, and it was kind of this stew. And when they were done having their meeting, they opened the pot of the stew, the pot from the stew, and this wonderful aroma came out, and it was so delicious that all the monks next door jumped over the wall to see what was cooking. And so that's why the dish is called Buddha Jumps Over the Wall, because it was so delicious smelling that it made all these Buddhist monks jump over the wall to see what it was.
Well, we're down to the last minute or so, Grace. You did decide to include one recipe in this entire book of over 280 pages. What recipe did you include and why?
I included my mother's scallion pancake recipe. I think the reason why is because I have the most vivid memories of making that with her. We didn't make it often. I think we only made it like two or three times in my childhood. But I can kind of remember, I kind of really vividly remember each time we made it. And also scallion pancakes is kind of, the story of that is one of my absolute favorites. It's not true at all, which is what I found out making this book. But the myth goes that the scallion pancake inspired the Italian pizza.
I love that.
Yeah.
And with that, we want to thank you for bringing such joy to us by writing this book. And I know our listeners will benefit by checking it out. Really, for any young people that are looking to explore these wonderful Chinese myths, your writing is so uplifting.
And the illustrations are fantastic.
Oh, thank you.
Grace Lin, Chinese Menu, the history, myths, and legends behind your favorite foods. It's new. Look for it. Thanks again for joining us, Grace.
Thank you so much.
Our pleasure. Back after this, and we will meet an exciting new cheesemaker here in Sonoma County. It's the KS Arnold Good Food Hour with Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner.
Sonoma County's News Talk, KSRO, on FM at 103.5 in Santa Rosa and Windsor, and now at 96.9 in Petaluma.
Hi, it's Dennis from the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market at Luther Burbank Center. I'd like to talk a bit about our market. Sure, we have great coffee, crepes, salsa, sausage, fruits, veggies, crafts, and much, much more. But to me, it's what you can't buy that makes the market special, and that's the people. You may have heard me speak with Steve on Saturday mornings on Garden Talk about buying potatoes from Tom or mushrooms from Barbara, forgetting to mention their business names. This is due to the relationships developed with those who grow the food we eat, something you can't get at the big supermarket chains. The vendors are a great resource to help create the perfect meal for you and your family. Bring your kids, grab a bite and something to drink, and shop the farmers market voted the best farmers market in Sonoma County 2 years running in the Press Democrats Readers Poll. We've been doing this for 50 years. We must be doing something right. So come and visit us at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1.
Hi, Hi, Sonoma County. Devin from Hook and Ladder Winery here. Summer is upon us, and things could not be more beautiful at the winery. With summer favorites being poured like crisp and delicious rosé of Pinot Noir or the bright and refreshing Olivet Ranch Sauvignon Blanc, Hook and Ladder is the go-to stop for a perfect wine country day. Or if you want great music, check out our concert series every first Friday of the month, featuring some of the best musical talent in the area at no charge.
Summer is in full bloom at Hook and Ladder Winery. Reserve your tasting online now. HookandLadderWinery.com has all the information you need to plan your visit to the winery. They're on Olivet Road, just south of River Road. See the full calendar of events, live music, comedy, and wonderful wines at HookandLadderWinery.com.
There is no better time of year to come by Hook and Ladder Winery to make the day the best it can be. So remember, love life, drink wine, whatever the occasion, Hook and Ladder Winery.
Traveling can be stressful, but it doesn't have to be. Next time you're planning a trip, fly out of the Charles M. Schulz Sonoma County Airport. With quick and easy check-in, on-site parking, and direct flights to 11 destinations, flying out of STS is the perfect way to start your journey. And with its convenient location, your trip starts sooner at STS. Grab a bite to eat, a glass of wine, and enjoy the beautiful new terminal. Book your next trip today at flysts.com. STS, half the distance, twice the experience.
It's the Chaos Hardo Good Food Hour. I'm Steve Garner along with Chef John Ash and me, Steve. And this next guest, John and I discovered, at least I discovered, this gentleman's cheese when, John, you were doing a demo at the Sebastopol Farmers Market.
Yeah,
and we were walking around afterwards and we saw this cheesemaker, and we both were knocked out by his cheese, and we said, we have to have this guy on the air.
Yeah, because they were different. It wasn't the usual lineup of cheeses that we often see.
So. And with that, we welcome Omer Seltzer to the Chaos Hardo Kitchen. Thanks for coming in today.
Hi, good morning.
Thanks. The name of your company is?
Mount Etan Cheese.
And where is Mount Etan?
So it's named after the mountain where my family has originally established our goat farm in Israel in 1973.
Yes. So over a long time ago.
Yes.
Looking at
and you made your family made cheese there. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yeah.
My parents started the farm as an educational place for young teens, and it kind of evolved into this family project with goats. My mother's a veterinarian. She imported the first Nubian goats to Israel. So we were the initial first herd of Nubians in Israel. And from there, using the milk, trying to figure out the different flavors, different ways of using the milk, and we just started making cheese.
So how did you get to Sonoma County?
That's a long story. we actually, so our farm was operating for 50 years on government land because the idea, well, I'm going back to the initial idea was to how to use public land, preserve it, and using goats to reduce fire brush and reduce fire risk and reduce the brush. And it was a huge success. And after 50 years, the project was done. Okay. And we tried to look what we were doing. It was during the pandemic. Me and my family started traveling, and we landed up in Sonoma County. We have family here, and we just fell in love with the place.
Well, we're very lucky to have you here.
Yeah.
Did you study technical cheesemaking?
So there are two routes. The first route is the traditional cheesemaking, and that's something I grew up doing. One of the things as a newish kind of farm that we used to have, we collected a lot of techniques and a lot of ways to use cheese and try to understand how to use that. And in the desert climate, we tried to have the flavors come into effect. So the goats were grazing different vegetation along the year, And by using that different vegetation, you have different flavors development in the cheese.
And is it all Nubian goats that you make
so
cheese
there
from?
There it used to be Nubian. In Sonoma County, I have encountered fabulous milk. I think it's that was a huge surprise for me. In the beginning, we did think about raising our own animals, but people have been doing it for so long here. It's such a great tradition. I came across amazing milk. And
can you get enough of it? One of the concerns is supply, I guess, to make cheese with, because you have a lot of competition.
I don't know. I'm a small creamery. Uh-huh. I'm not a huge dairy. Uh-huh. The idea is to have several different types of cheese using different techniques. So I don't use a lot of milk, but I use a variety of milk sources, and that's what makes it really interesting. Yeah. I think that's what brings in most of the characteristics from the cheese.
And where do you make the cheese?
In Bodega, which is interesting. It is an interesting climate. It's really unique, I think.
And you probably have interesting neighbors, too.
Interesting neighbors. Yeah. Interesting neighbors, interesting area. Yeah, coming in from a different desert type climate,
coastal salty saline.
Yeah, the flora, the fauna, everything is completely different. It's the linens, the Bravibacterium linens, which have this amazing effect on the cheese. They just flourish, and I've always had to really have. A really interesting way of helping them to grow, and here that just happens naturally, and that's amazing. I get to experience different things.
So your cheeses are different than other goat cheese makers here because of the techniques you use, and also because of the as you mentioned, the fauna and the flora and all of that stuff. Is it fair to say that they're not the traditional goat cheeses that we sort of see that, you know, the big producers are making and all of that?
I think it's a different, I'll use a word that's used often in the way that fermentation happens. Mm-hmm. It's a different pathway. Mm-hmm. I look at the process. I'm interested in the process. And if there's a flavor I like in the original milk that I'd like to preserve that, I'll use different techniques. I'm not as interested in the end product. If the product on along the way is the right fermentation happening, if it's maintaining that flavor that I wish to maintain in the cheese, then that will grow up and mature to be that aged cheese. That's the affinage in a nutshell. Mm. Having the way to manipulate those flavors that I want to enhance in the cheese.
When did you release your first cheese?
When did I?
Here in Sonoma County.
Oh, in Sonoma County. So this year, we opened up this year. Our plant was open January 1st. And now we are, now we're in growing production. Yeah. We try to stay here.
And where are your cheeses available besides the Sebastopol Farmers Market?
So as I mentioned before, we're a small creamery, and I'm trying to stay small. It's a challenge, but I think that's the only way we can maintain the flavors that we're doing. It is a project, and it is a project to kind of have that family heritage keep it going. So that's why we're really interested in trying to have a small enough production that would be fruitful and helpful for mm-hmm.
So are they available only at the Sebastopol Farmers Market at this point?
So we do have local shops. We were fortunate enough in the beginning when we just opened to have the Bodega Country Store carry our cheeses. Oh. And they are like kind of like our storefront. They carry almost all our product that is available at that week, and try to stack them up.
Wow. So get it while you can. Mm-hmm. Our guest today in the Chaos Artel Kitchen is Omer Seltzer. He is the cheesemaker and owner of Mount Eitan Cheese, E-I-T-A-N. He comes from a lineage of cheesemaking royalty, I guess you could say. His dad made cheese for, what, 40, 50 years or so?
Yes.
And you were in charge of the herd in Israel?
So I started small in the when I came back to the farm. I was about 22, and I was hardly allowed into the creamery. That was his domain, and I got sent off to start managing the herd. So I started by grazing the animals, seeing what they eat, and understanding how to take care of the animals. Made a lot of mistakes there. I tried to be smarter than nature. I figured out that was the wrong way. And after 5 years, I've qualified enough to step into the creamery and start washing the dishes.
We'll take a break and we'll come back and we will start tasting some of these beautiful cheeses that Omer has brought us today. Steve Garner and Chef John Ash in the Chaos Artel Kitchen. It's the Chaos Artel Good Food Hour.
KSRO, Sonoma County's FM News Talk.
Is your home's heating system ready for the winter chill? For a limited time only, Henry Mechanical is offering a furnace tune-up and safety inspection that includes a free carbon monoxide test and duct inspection, regularly priced at $199 for only $69. Tuning up your furnace will ensure that your home's heating system is operating safely and efficiently, help prevent costly and untimely breakdowns, and increase the life expectancy of your system. At Henry Mechanical, we pride ourselves on delivering quality service that you can trust. And for over 30 years, we've been committed to providing our customers with timely, efficient, and long-lasting solutions you can count on. Get prepared for winter by calling Henry Mechanical to schedule a furnace tune-up and safety inspection. And get a carbon monoxide test and duct inspection for free. That's a $199 value for only $69. So don't delay. Call Henry Mechanical today or visit henrymechanical.com.
Hi, it's Dennis from the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market at Luther Burbank Center. I'd like to talk a bit about our market. Sure, we have great coffee, crepes, salsa, sausage, fruits, veggies, crafts, and much, much more. But to me, it's what you can't buy that makes the market special, and that's the people. You may have heard me speak with Steve on Saturday mornings on Garden Talk about buying potatoes from Tom or mushrooms from Barbara, forgetting to mention their business names. This is due to the relationships developed with those who grow the food we eat, something you can't get at the big supermarket chains. The vendors are a great resource to help create the perfect meal for you and your family. Bring your kids, grab a bite and something to drink, and shop the farmers market voted the best farmers market in Sonoma County 2 years running in the Press Democrats Readers Poll. We've been doing this for 50 years. We must be doing something right. So come and visit us at the Santa Rosa Original Certified Farmers Market, Wednesdays and Saturdays, 8:30 to 1.
Sonoma County Man. Sutter Health's webinar series continues. From the comfort of your home computer, learn about prostate health, causes of prostate issues, and detecting prostate cancer, along with non-surgical treatment options, minimally invasive robotic surgery, and surviving cancer. Get your questions answered live by our award-winning urological surgeon. Sign up for the free online seminar Thursday, September 14th at 6 p.m. Go to KSRO.com and click on the Sutter banner. KSRO.com.
We could not be happier to introduce you to a wonderful new cheesemaker here in Sonoma County, Omer Seltzer, S-E-L-T-Z-E-R, and he is the owner of Mount Eitan Cheese, which is made out in Bodega, only available a couple places at this point, but that may or may not change as he wants to keep it small and personal. Start us off with our cheese tasting, Omer. What are we tasting first?
Hey, so we'll start off from the top. I put the top first cheese on the plate here. It's a lactic cheese. We call it Moni. It's named after my brother. Moni is his nickname. And this cheese has been going on for years. And it's one of the first cheese I made from California Sonoma milk. It's really interesting. I think the characteristics of it is really interesting. It's really smooth.
And it's soft. It's a soft ripening cheese, right?
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. And this technique is so easy. And if you have good milk, you'll have a good cheese. That's what makes this cheese so nice and so palatable.
So this is because a fresh cheese.
You made cheese in France for a period of time.
Yes.
Is that correct?
Yes.
So this tastes so French to me. It has that, you know, really lots of flavor. Sometimes the cheeses we get locally are, you know, they're a little lacking in that goatiness and all of that stuff, which I really love.
I think I differentiate between the goaty off flavor that you sometimes get.
Yeah, and I didn't mean that.
and the goaty flavor is something that is very important. It's it really intellates about the characteristics of the milk. I love this milk. I think this milk is wonderful. And I keep on prizing the milk.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the base. It's you can't make good milk, good cheese out of bad milk.
You sound like a winemaker. It's all in the vineyards. You
know, so that's your freshest cheese. Is that why we started with that one?
We started with the lactic cheeses. The next one is another lactic cheese. This one is covered with charcoal, and I really like these two cheeses together because I think they tell a big story.
When you say lactic cheese, what does that mean?
It means that you add very little enzymes to coagulate the milk. So the coagulation happens just by the slow acidification of the milk itself. And that's what binds the cheese texture together, or makes the texture.
That's delicious.
Why do you add the charcoal on the outside?
That's another technique that helps the cheese, because it's a lactic cheese. You want to tone down the acidification of the cheese. It kind of neutralizes that entire acidification of the cheese.
That's just beautiful. Mm-hmm. So these are both goat milk cheeses, correct?
These are goat milk, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what's the third one that we're going to taste?
So the third one I put on your plate is now going to the hard cheese. I think you have different plates, but have a look at this cheese, the hard cheese first. The other one.
This one.
Yes. And this is another. This is a hard goat milk. This is named Raya, and it's named after my sister. This is 6 months. 6 months. Aging process. What is interesting with this cheese is that I didn't know where I was going with it. It was right after we started the creamery. It was kind of having that trying to catch as much technique as I could into this cheese in order to learn about the different way it might go. So I made a very mild cheese, but then all the flavor comes from the acidification of the cheese and the affinage. That's why it was
the aging process.
Yes, the way you cure the cheese as it's aging to try to maintain that flavor. I think that's why the affinage, or the way that you age the cheese, is so important. Has such a big influence on the flavor.
So this is a raw milk cheese, correct?
No. I don't make any. I source all the milk. Mm-hmm. So the idea is to have pasteurized milk.
Yeah,
and it has a lot of benefits. I think I learned this from my mother. My mother is a veterinarian, as I said, and she dealt a lot with the Bedouin community down in the south, and trying to prevent disease that you see in different parts of the world by what the family consumes. So I think the public health aspect of it kind of forced me to pasteurize all the milk.
Interesting, because there is this controversy about from an enjoyment standpoint, which is better, raw milk or pasteurized milk to do things. I wouldn't know the difference myself, but
I grew up in parts of the world, and I made cheese in parts of the world where it's a big issue, and public safety is a big issue, and I think if you do right technique, you can overcome some of those flavor loss that you have during pasteurization.
We'll take a break at that point. We have three more cheeses to try. Omer Seltzer is in the KS Auto Kitchen today. His new company is Mount Eitan Cheese. He just released his first cheeses several months ago, MT.EITAN. It's only available at the Sebastopol Farm Market and also, what, the Bodega Shop, is that correct?
Yes.
Just two places at this point.
We'll take a break. Yeah, that's it.
We'll take a break. We'll be right back.
Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie. What lurks on KSRO after dark? Find out tonight at 10 p.m. This is KSRO.
Hi, Sonoma County. Devin from Hook and Ladder Winery here. Summer is upon us, and things could not be more beautiful at the winery. With summer favorites being poured like crisp and delicious rosé of Pinot Noir or the bright and refreshing Olivet Ranch Sauvignon Blanc, Hook and Ladder is the go-to stop for a perfect wine country day. Or if you want great music, check out our concert series every first Friday of the month, featuring some of the best musical talent in the area at no charge.
Summer is in full bloom at Hook and Ladder Winery. Reserve your tasting online now. HookandLadderWinery.com has all the information you need to plan your visit to the winery. They're on Olivet Road, just south of River Road. See the full calendar of events, live music, comedy, and wonderful wines at HookandLadderWinery.com.
There is no better time of year to come by Hook and Ladder Winery to make the day the best it can be. So remember, love life, drink wine, whatever the occasion, Hook and Ladder Winery.
How's your garden? Any problem areas? Every garden has at least one. Maybe it's the soil pH. Maybe too much or not enough sun or water. Maybe you just can't get anything to grow in that spot over there. Wouldn't you love to have a monster garden where every plant lives its best life?
Unlock the potential of your garden. Reach out to Monster Gardens in Rohnert Park, trusted hydroponics experts. Monster Gardens carries a monster inventory of hand-selected indoor and outdoor gardening supplies. Top of the line at affordable prices. Products sourced locally and nationally.
And knowledgeable, super helpful staff with over 50 years of collective expertise. Monster Gardens backs the products they sell because they use them for their own gardens. Their mission is to make sure you have a successful growing experience. So they're going to support and guide you every step of the way.
Monster Gardens, the trusted name in hydroponics and the ultimate destination for all your gardening needs and ambitions. Visit in person or online at monstergardens.com. Monstergardens.com.
Have you heard about Mountain Mike's new garlic knot knots? These are not your average knots. Featuring Mountain Mike's signature dough made in-house daily, folded around layers of garlic, butter, and cheese, served with creamy garlic sauce. At just $5.99 for a limited time, each order of these savory delights comes with six hot, ooey, gooey knots. A perfect way to level up your pizza game. Save time and order ahead on the Mountain Mike's app. Get more info at mountainmikes.com.
It's time for Wilco's annual Full Box Produce Sale, where you'll find locally sourced and perfectly ripe tomatoes, peppers, cucumbers, and more. The annual produce sale is 3 days only, the 8th through the 10th, at your local farmer-owned co-op, Wilco.
KSRO, AM, FM, and online. Depend on it.
Chef John Ash and me, Steve Garner, in the KS Auto Kitchen, and we're delighted to introduce you and taste for the first time the full range of cheeses from Mount Eitan Cheese, E-I-T-A-N, made in Bodega, right here in California in Sonoma County, by cheesemaker owner Omer Seltzer. And we're down to the cow milk cheeses, aren't we, Omer?
Yeah, we're going to try. This one is a fairly new cheese. It's 3 months old. We just released this cheese now. It's really interesting. It's as local as milk can be. It's Jersey milk, whole Jersey milk. There's a philosophy saying that you don't separate the milk from the fats. So the butter fats are all in there. So it's about 5% butter fat that you get during this season, which is very remarkable. And this cheese is very mild. It's a little bit young. It's a little bit on the aging could go on a little bit longer, but for me this is
it's really good,
really rich.
It's got a tang to it too, which is delicious.
Yeah, I'm really happy. Like I said before, I can't praise the milk enough. I think Sonoma County has this interesting milk history.
Well, that's beautiful. What is the name of this cheese?
We call it Bell, B-E-L-L, Bell.
And this is another cousin or something? No.
it's a tricky thing. It's a family member. Yeah. It's kind of an acronym of a family member name. Yeah.
That's wonderful. And the next one, this is an interesting looking one, this next cheese.
Okay, so this cheese is a very traditional cheese. We cover it with grape leaves. And it's a pâte molle. That's the technique of this cheese. Historically speaking, this cheese has been aged for a very, very long period of time. You want it to really become gooey inside and have that creaminess to it. Mm. And the grape leaf really helps with that. It traps the moisture inside the cheese, helps that flavor development along the edges of the cheese, and then as it works its way in. So this cheese is in halfway in the ripening process, so you have that extra flavor inside and out.
How long does this traditionally age for?
I usually age it for at least a month.
1 month.
Mm. Yeah.
And can it age much longer?
It would just become very, 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 very
gooey.
Gooey, incredible.
But gooey is not the word. It's like spills out of the shell.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this is the same Jersey milk?
No, this is goat milk.
Or
this
is going back to goat milk.
Yeah. That's right. We'll alternate back to goat milk.
Mm. Well, you have lots of grape leaves to choose from in Sonoma County.
Yeah. The season is the early season. That's when you pick the grape leaves. Mm-hmm. And then you cure them for the entire year. So once you run out.
Oh. And what's the final cheese?
The final cheese is a Bulgarian cheese. Some people call it Bulgarian feta. This is a technique that is used up in northern Greece, during that area of the world. This technique is different than the feta that you see from the plains or from the sheep milk. Mm-hmm. The texture is different, the characteristics is different, and the percentage of salt you put into the brine is different. This has less salt than the feta.
This is really different than most commercial fettas that I've tasted.
It's great.
It's creamier. Mm-hmm. It's milder. It's not the first thing you are hit with is not salt.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But is this in a brine?
Yes. So this sits in the brine.
Oh, there it is. I see.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It just comes out of the brine, and you can reduce the percentage of salt if you dilute the brine a little bit. So some people don't do that with feta, but it's one of the common practices after you age it for a while, before you eat the cheese,
and what
you dump
makes
part
it,
of the brine.
What makes it Bulgarian?
So the technique. So the technique of the cheese is a completely different technique than you use in the feta. That's why it's not a feta, even though they're similar in family. Mm-hmm. They're both aged in brine, but the technique and the cheese production is completely different.
This is fascinating. It's A-D-Y, is that the name of this cheese?
Yes.
Is that a family member?
That's a family member. Another acronym on a family member, yeah.
And this was goat milk cheese aged in brine from the Mount Etan Cheese Company. Generations of artisanal cheese making, starting with your dad's over 50 years ago. MT.EITAN. It's only available in two places at this point. Is that correct? The Bodega store?
Yeah, we have some more places that we're reaching out to and working with the local shops.
But at this point, it's there or the Sebastopol Farmers Market on Sunday.
That's where you can that's where you can see me. A lot of people started shopping around for it in other places, which I'm very happy and very excited. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you for coming in. This was a real treat.
It was. It's they're so delicious, and they're different, you know, which is nice. You know, they don't taste like big manufactured cheeses at all.
It's It's a tradition. It's a tradition of a way of making cheese. I think that is important.
For well, us. Keep it up.
And thank you for living in Sonoma County. Uh-huh.
Thank you.
We feel very fortunate. Thank you, Chef John Ash.
You're welcome.
We will be back, of course, next Saturday with Kitty. And Kitty's written a wonderful new book. Thrilled to
so what is the book about? It's a memoir of
an immigrant's life
from
Europe.
Of being in Europe during the occupation of World War II.
It's a fascinating cookbook. Yeah. We hope you'll join us for that. Coming up next at the table with Clark Wolf, following the news. This is KSRO. This is